You're listening to MLB on TuneIn Live,
the podcast.
Play ball!
Presented by eSurance, official sponsor of Major League Baseball. eSurance, insurance for the modern world. We're giving you the best content from each episode of MLB on TuneIn Live. MLB on TuneIn Live airs weekdays from 7 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time on TuneIn.
Welcome into MLB on TuneIn, the podcast, presented by eSurance. I'm Holden Kushner, and today I'm joined by Ned Coletti. 14 games were played on Wednesday. We'll talk about them shortly. We'll also have the triple play. We're going to start tonight with Gift Ngope. He's the Pirate infielder who on Wednesday night became the first player from Africa to ever reach the major leagues, and he joined us right after the game to discuss the historic moment. We had a special moment in tonight's game. Gift Ngope comes in as a defensive replacement. Gift Ngope singles in his first at-bat, and the first player ever born in Africa to debut in Major League Baseball is with us right now, Gift Ngope. Gift, my name is Holden Kushner, alongside Ned Coletti. He was the longtime general manager of the Dodgers. Thanks for the time, and congratulations. Tell us what it was like playing in a big league game tonight.
Thank you very much. It was very overwhelming and very nerve-wracking a little bit, but I was able to keep my calm and play the game I was supposed to do. And I enjoyed every single moment. I'm still taking everything in right now, and it's a special moment, and I'll remember this for the rest of my life.
This is Ned Coletti there, Gifton. It's a historic night in so many ways, not just for you and your family or the Pittsburgh Pirates, but really for the continent of Africa. This is a big thing. How much baseball did you play growing up?
Baseball growing up was pretty good. We had a strong competitive league in South Africa, and it's just competing against three major sports: rugby, cricket, and soccer. Was killing the game, and we were losing a little bit of youth development. So it's growing slowly but surely, and I'm sure there might be a couple other South Africans making their way to professional baseball one day.
You think so? From what I understand, so your mother was there, what was it, the Rundberg Mets? Is there baseball going on in South Africa? Were you around baseball, and did that help you get into the game so that you were out on the field in Pittsburgh tonight?
Yes. So my mom worked for the Rundberg Mets, and as a child, she brought me with me from the rural areas because she was in the urban areas, and she asked the people if I could move in with her because I was sick at the time, and she didn't want to leave work and everything like that. So they told me that I can come live with her, and I was watching these people, with this round bat and round ball doing their thing out on the field. And so I picked up the ball one day, and I decided to throw it against the wall, and the coach yelled at me, and he's like, "Hey, you want to join? Come join. You have a pretty good arm." And that's how my baseball career started. Me being around baseball that whole time, and growing up and watching the All African games, the South African team play in, I think it was 1999. That inspired me even more because there was a couple guys that played professional in that team.
Talk for a minute, if you will, on the adjustments that you had to make. Maybe the toughest one or two adjustments in coming to a new country and a different culture.
Coming to a new country, I mean, just being the biggest one is being away from my family for so long. I was used to being away from them for like a month, and when I signed my contract and knowing that I'm not going to see them for about eight to 10 months was a little bit sad, but mm-hmm. I continued. They backed me up each and every single day. And one of the other biggest ones was, in South Africa, we only played game once a week, and coming to the States, we're playing every single day. So that kind of took a beating on my body. And I just learned so much so much baseball in such a period of time, and I felt like all I learned in one season here in the States is like 10 years in South Africa.
Wow.
Gift and go pay. Last one for you. Again, the first player ever born in Africa to play in Major League Baseball. This has been, first of all, an honor for us to talk to you. I hope you understand the magnitude of this, because this is a gigantic thing to have reached the continent of Africa. But what have they done with the ball on your first hit? What are you doing with your glove, your uniform, everything like that? Is any of that going to the Hall of Fame? Are you taking it home with you? Tell me about everything you were wearing tonight and that ball that you got the first hit with.
The ball, they'll give it to me at some point. My uniform will be authenticated. I heard that my hat will be going to the Hall of Fame, and yeah, my glove, I still got it. I need it for the whole season, so they'll be catching a lot of ground balls. And, yeah, and my cleats and all my stuff, I'm going to keep with me.
Well, congratulations. What a great night for you and for Major League Baseball and for your family and for the continent of Africa. Congratulations. Thank you for joining us tonight.
All right. Thank you very much for having me.
You're listening to MLB on TuneIn, the podcast, presented by eSurance. And we'll be right back with more after this. TuneIn is your home for all NFL action, now featuring No Huddle.
Cordell Stewart, he's just that versatile.
And Brian Weber.
I'm a middle-aged white guy. It's a team effort here.
You're a great guy.
Yeah,
excellent young man. I appreciate it.
I wouldn't
you.
Go. Oh,
I gave you young man
save
for that one.
Save the tape. Excellent young man,
this
Brian
is the
Weber.
Last time I'll say it, though.
Cordell Stewart and Brian Weber will break down all things NFL.
I'm not doing truth.
You have to.
I'm telling you what the outcome's going to be.
That's the problem I'm having with you right
truth
now.
Truth is the name of your
because
book.
Because you know sell what's that book wrong, and you know what's right. You would prefer to go with what's wrong because the pundits are the ones that determine what happens.
I'm telling you what's going to happen.
No, I'm asking you.
The name of the show is not Shoulda, Woulda, Coulda.
Let's try this one.
That's our podcast.
Let me rephrase this one more time.
We're going to do that on Sunday.
Listen live Monday through Friday from 1 to 4 p.m. Eastern, or catch all the replays and interviews on demand on the NFL on TuneIn.
It's like us being on our app and being able to come into your cell phones, and it's different now.
This is MLB on TuneIn, the podcast, presented by eSurance, official sponsor of Major League Baseball. Now, here are your hosts, Holden Kushner and Ned Coletti.
It's time now for the MLB on TuneIn Live Triple Play, which is where Ned and I discuss three topics that interest us. We'll cover Aaron Judge mashing fastballs, what the White Sox could do midseason with some of their stars, and the Dodgers' two young studs, Urias and Bellinger.
The MLB on TuneIn Triple Play, presented by eSurance.
You know, fastballs. I bet you if I look at the home runs that Judge has had of his seven home runs, seven have probably been fastballs. They just can't get it past them. And, you know, it's not like you're going to stop throwing the pitch, Ned, but he just crushes those things.
He is a big man with big-time power. And they're off to a good start, and a lot of it sits with him and the other young players that they've got over there, guys that have really kind of stepped it up early in the season. Of course, you got miles to go before you're going to really write it all in ink, but been a really, really great opening act.
I mean, what do you look at and say this is the reason why they're off to a great start? Is it the great numbers from the bullpen that it seems like they have every year? Is it Severino and Sabathia? Is it Judge and the rest of the offense? Can you point to a couple things that you think are the reason why they've really taken off this year?
Well, they have pitched pretty good, and we talked all last summer about Severino and how he had fallen back. Well, obviously, he's in a different place this year than he was a year ago. And what happens with a team that is rebuilding, typically what you see is that the bullpen is where it's weak. And so you get leads. Sometimes you'll have a lead, and you end up losing the lead. And those things wear a team out. They haven't done that. Their bullpen has been good. Chapman has been really good. I think that the team is, I think it's coming together because of how it pitches. And I think Joe Girardi also deserves a lot of credit. Joe's a great manager, and Joe is a great person who holds people accountable. He can teach the game. And I think that their transition, at least through 18 games, is far quicker than I think people thought it would be.
Yeah, well, if you remember, too, after they had the sell-off in July last year, that team played really well up until the final 2 weeks of the season. I think people will gloss over that.
No doubt. And it's, you know, you look at September, and you don't take September seriously sometimes. But when you're in New York and every game has got tremendous coverage and magnitude to it, those games do mean a little bit more. And I think that they showed well. I think they took the winner. And they continue to probably work on not only building their club, but also building the smaller and intrinsic values that go into winning, especially in that city, especially in that franchise. A lot of expectation, a lot of different things that you got to be able to do that you may not have to do in another place. But I think that they've worked at it. I think they've quietly, as people talk about the Red Sox and Chris Sale, and they talk about Baltimore and bringing their team back and all the good things there, and they talk about Toronto, who's off to obviously a brutal start. The Yankees were kind of the fourth-place team. Yeah, better than Tampa, but really not anybody to be reckoned with. And thus far, they've been a match to anybody except really Baltimore, who's off to maybe the best start in baseball.
Yep, no doubt about it. Aaron Judge, by the way, home run on his 25th birthday. Happy birthday to him. Last Yankee to hit a home run on his birthday at Fenway Park was Roger Maris back in 1966. Hey, Ned, I'm looking at the White Sox here. I mean, long term, do I think that they're going to be an above 500 team? No. Crazier things have happened, though. The way Rick Hahn was working this offseason, trying to sell all the parts, they're in a complete rebuild. That being said, the team's gotten off to a nice start at this point. Is there almost anything that could stop Rick Hahn from listening to offers for Quintana and Robertson at this point? Is there any scenario where the White Sox would hold and actually try and make a run for the playoffs?
Well, I think a couple things would have to happen. First of all, by the time they got to the 31st of July, they would have to be really, really into the race. And you'd have to make a judgment call of whether or not you thought you were good enough to get through a series or two of postseason baseball. If you think you're just having a good regular season and that you're not going to be able to match up when it comes to October, then you've still got to sell. And I think if they do fall back, obviously it's a simpler equation. You just have to sell. But I think that you got to get to that point, and I think it's two steps. Are you in the race, and do you really feel that if you do make it, that you do have an eight enough to make it, and that you do have a chance to win once you get there? Remember back in 1997, Ron Schuller was the GM of the White Sox, and I happened to be in San Francisco working for the Giants then. He made a big trade. They were three games back at Cleveland on the 31st of July, and he traded the Giants, Wilson Alvarez, Roberto Hernandez, and Danny Darwin. Got five prospects back, including Keith Foulke, including Caruso, who went on to be the number three in the Rookie of the Year balloting a year later. Also Bobby Howry, along with a couple other players. And he took incredible heat for making that deal. But in his mind, and he said it publicly, we were going to have a chance to compete for the division, but I didn't see us getting deep into the postseason. So I had a chance to reload my farm system, and that's what I decided to do. I think if the White Sox are in it by the time you get to the 31st of July, I think that's the question Rick Hahn will have to answer. Can they get beyond a first round?
Do you remember what the fan reaction was like at the time? Because ultimately, you can't. Can you take that into account as a general manager? I feel like you can't.
You really can't. But I mean, you know, I just bring it up as because it was part of the backstory to it. They call it the white flag trail, like surrender. Like they surrendered, even though we're within three games of the division at that point in time. It's a tough call, and you can't. You know, no disrespect, but you know, you can't make deals based on emotion. And a lot of times, fans. I have an emotional attachment to a club, with it, which is great. I mean, that's how the bills get paid. That's why people pay to play, to get paid to get to watch or to play the game. But I think that I think you have to really measure where your team is at. Just like a team that has got a chance to contend and doesn't have a lot of free agents, do they go and sell off prospects? Do they sell off prospects to maybe win another game or two down the stretch? And, yeah, they may get into the postseason, but they may play a week later and be home anyway. You trade your top prospects for that opportunity. Those are tough calls as well.
Yeah, I think it's just fascinating. And, you know, again, you go back to that Yankees trade last year. They were almost they were basically out of it. They weren't playing good baseball. They were 500 all year. They made the trades, and they went on the run. With the White Sox, I mean, I know the White Sox fans want to go back to the playoffs, but at this point, there's a plan in place. I think you just move on with it. We got this Dodgers game against the Giants. You may have heard of that rivalry a little bit. Cody Bellinger, wanted to talk to you about him. Guy I believe you drafted is batting leadoff tonight against the Giants. Tell me about Bellinger, and leadoff probably is not a place where you're going to see him very often, is it?
Well, maybe early on, but I think as time goes on, this kid has got great power. I think you're going to find him deeper in batting orders as he continues to gain experience. I think he's going to be one of the better young players in the game. He's somebody that the Dodgers have always kind of pushed and fast-tracked just a touch, putting him in leagues where he was probably the youngest player or among the youngest players as he made his way up through the system. And he would typically struggle for a little while and then figure it out and then become one of the best players in the league. I think that dimension is so important. And this young guy, he continues to do that. I think it was a good move by LA to bring him up now. Whether or not he stays all year is really kind of irrelevant at this point, as much as it is to give him the experience. So as they get into the second half of their season, if they do have to send him back out, and if he does end up coming back, that the experience that he's had now will end up serving him very well. So he'll have a tough night tonight because he'll be facing Johnny Cueto. But this kid is an interesting player. I don't know if he's going to be Seager, but I think he's going to be just maybe a notch below Seager, which is still pretty good.
Yeah, that's really good. And then Urias is up, and it looks like Urias is going to be up for the long term now. You know, hopefully never see the minor leagues again, but they're managing his innings, pitch count a little bit there, and good to see Urias finally getting a shot here. He'll be sticking the rest of the year, won't he?
Well, it sounds like he is going to, and I think it's something that you can change your mind at any point in time, but I do think that he's somebody that is maybe one of the best young pitchers in the game. So how they manage him, how they manage the innings with him is a big deal, because there's a difference between big league innings and minor league innings. And this guy last year pitched more innings than he's ever pitched before. He threw 77 at the big league level plus 45 at Oklahoma City. So he was at 122. A typical progression might be 150 at the big league level. He's got 14 thus far in the minor leagues. A little bit of command issues for him. 9 walks, 15 strikeouts. Strikeout an inning, but really a high walk total for Urias. He's always had great, great command. It's just been a matter of him physically maturing to equal the ability and the thought process, because the kid is very sharp. He knows how to pitch. Curious to see how he does, and also how his season goes, because it is something you do have to monitor a little bit. And you'd hate to be in a spot like Washington was a few years ago, where Strasburg hit his innings limit, and it was but a couple weeks to go, and kind of left, you know, when you players know who everybody is, and when you take a guy like that out of the clubhouse, that takes a lot with him.
You're listening to MLB on TuneIn, the podcast, presented by eSurance, and we'll be right back with more after this. Immerse yourself in the world of the Young Turks, the podcast that progressively combines all of the news, politics, and pop culture trends that people care about all in one place. Hosted by Cenk Uygur and Anna Kasparian, dive in headfirst each day with shows that cover the latest in American politics and foreign policy, breaking news, sports, entertainment, and much more. Join the movement with the Young Turks. New shows play daily on TuneIn. Tune in. Listen like you mean it. And now, more of MLB on TuneIn, the podcast, presented by eSurance. Now, here are your hosts, Holden Kushner and Ned Coletti.
There were 14 games on Wednesday, and to recap the action now, we've got Best Day Ever, the Home Run Tracker, and Statistically Speaking. Let's start with Best Day Ever, Home Run Tracker, Statistically Speaking.
Best Day Ever on MLB on TuneIn Live.
It's pretty simple. We talked to Gifton Gopé, made his Major League debut, first African-born ball player in Major League Baseball. That was totally awesome. Very proud of this guy. Said his hat is probably going to the Hall of Fame, hoping to get his ball and his jersey back. He's got to keep his glove. Kid had a good sense of humor. He was overwhelmed. Come on. Hey, what went wrong for this guy tonight? Absolutely nothing. He singles in his first at-bat. He played second base. Best day ever, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Historic best day ever.
Yep, I don't even think it's an argument. Now, Alex Wood, who's got a no-hitter through five for the Dodgers, could be our best day ever, but I'm going to go with James Paxton on the mound, Ned, as Paxton threw 7 shutout innings of 4-hit baseball. He struck out 9 tonight, and he improved to 3-0 with a 1.39 ERA. So I am going with James Paxton, best day ever on the mound. How about you?
I think I'm going to go although I loved Paxton, I think I'm going to go with Severino with the Yankees. Pitched very well tonight. been pitching well all season long. I'm going to go with Mr. Severino, who shut the Red Sox down tonight in misty Fenway Park. Look, the scene there, it looked like you could be writing a novel in a like a murder mystery out at the Fens tonight.
Yep, absolutely. All the home runs in the world tonight. All the home runs. There's a lot of them.
MLB on TuneIn Live, Home Run Tracker.
And it actually started this afternoon. I mean, I might only be doing the home runs that go 400 feet or longer. I think I'm going to do it. I'm going to break Abe's heart on this. Joey Votto in the first hit one 420, 420 feet. He also hit 111 miles an hour off the bat. So 420 and 111 off the bat, 111, that is going to be the hardest hit ball today. Adam Duvall, the Reds, 403. Scott Schebler hit one 417 and 389, just so you know. Avisail Garcia hit the farthest home run of the day. Wow, he punished this one, 451 feet, and he ties Votto for the hardest hit home run tonight at 111 miles an hour. El Oso Blanco, Evan Gattis of the Astros hit one 433. Aaron Judge's 385, but it was 110 off the bat. Brian McCann of the Astros 403, and Michael Franco's grand slam went 419 feet. Tim Beckham's home run, another for the Tampa Bay Rays, 401 feet. Nelly Cruz hit one 401. Josh Bell of the Pirates blasted one 424. Michael Saunders came up with a 411-foot home run. Trey Turner's home run at Coors Field went 437. His teammate Ryan Zimmerman hit it 400. And Eric Ibar in the late slate here with a 403-foot blast. All right, I'll get to your 300-foot home runs there, Abe. Daniel Murphy hit one 396. Anthony Rizzo, the Cubs, 358. Freddie Galvis, 353. Tim Beckham, his other home run, his second home run, leaving at 378 feet. And Eduardo Escobar, the Twins, at 383. Martin Prado of the Marlins, 376. Aaron Judge, already told you, 385, 110. Josh Harrison of the Pirates, 375. Garcia from the White Sox, 361. Schebler hit two. That first one told you about 417. His second went 389. And Orlando Arcia hit one 357. Times to look into the numbers of the night.
Statistically speaking.
All right. Michael Franco, second Grand Slam this year. First Phillies player in history with two Grand Slams in April in a season. Entering this year, he was 2-for-19 with the bases loaded. This year, he's 3-for-5 with two home runs. You know, small sample sizes, right, Ned? Small sample sizes. Try not to take them too seriously. 2-for-19 with the bases loaded. Boom. Now he's got two Grand Slams already this season. Impressive.
Yep. You know what? Becoming a face of their franchise a little bit. You know, they've had great third baseman over there before. Kid is coming on, and as that team gets better, he is going to become more and more of a national story, a national player. Hit him tonight where Ryan Howard used to hit him. Out that left center field area there, just to the third base side of the center field. Big time power, big time hit.
He's a bad dude. Aaron Judge hit a homer on his 25th birthday. Last Yankee to hit a home run on his birthday at Fenway was Roger Maris back in 66. Reds first time three players with 7+ home runs in the team's first 22 games since 1987. This year's Votto, Schebler, and Duvall. In 87, it was Cal Daniels, Dave Parker, and Eric Davis.
Wow. Oh. Cal Daniels. Wow.
Eric Davis. Wow. Dave Parker with the Pirates. Wow. But Eric Davis. Oh. For a period of what, maybe 4 or 5 years, Eric Davis was one of the best players in the game. Him and Strawberry grew up together.
Oh yeah. Had great, great wrist, boy. Great wrist, great hands.
Gift and Gopay, who just joined us, entered the game at second for the Pirates, making his ML debut, becomes the game's first African-born player. Bryce Harper, now 4-for-4 tonight. His average is creeping up around 430, and it's the fourth best April hitter ever. He's the fourth best April hitter ever statistically behind Ruth, Williams, and Bonds.
I've heard of all three of those guys.
Do you think any of them were better than Eric Davis and Cal Daniels?
Who, those three?
Yeah.
Well, sadly, I have to say that all three were better.
Well, it's not sad. It's just a fact, my friend.
Okay, well.
Luis Severino, first career game with 7 innings pitched and no earned runs. Youngest Yankee with 7 scoreless against the Red Sox since Jabba Chamberlain in 2008. Nelson Cruz hit his third career home run off of Aníbal Sanchez, tied for his most against any pitcher since joining the Mariners. Also had three off of Martin Perez and Hector Santiago. Entering tonight, last 166 games of Red Sox-Yankees went 83-83 overall, 42-42 at Yankee Stadium, 41-41 at Fenway, and now it is 84-83 Yankees on top. That is remarkable. Oh, my gosh.
Ay. That is that's crazy.
That's mind-blowing. How do you play 166 games to a draw between those two teams?
You know what? I think the Dodgers and the Cubs had done the same thing with, like, 2,000 games in the books.
Like going through the history of time?
Oh, yeah.
The Dodgers and the Cubs?
I think so. I think I'm pretty sure that's correct. It's the Dodgers and the Cubs, or maybe the I think it's the Dodgers and the Giants. It's the Dodgers and the Cubs. And a couple of years ago, they were in a dead heat with over 2,000 games played against each other.
That is remarkable. Maybe that'll be in another statistically speaking. Also, most starts of 7-plus innings pitch while allowing zero runs. Royals, number one, with 4 games. James Paxton, number 2, with 3. Cardinals also have 3. And then there's 8 teams tied with 2. So, 7-plus shutout innings. James Paxton, he has that cornered right now.
You're listening to MLB on TuneIn, the podcast, presented by eSurance. And we'll be right back with more after this. TuneIn is your home for all NFL action, now featuring No Huddle.
Cordell Stewart, he's just that versatile.
And Brian Weber.
I'm a middle-aged white guy. It's a team effort here.
You're a great guy.
Yeah,
excellent young man. I appreciate it.
I wouldn't go.
I gave you young man
save
for that one.
Save the tape. Excellent young man,
this
Brian
is the
Weber.
Last time I'll say it, though.
Cordell Stewart and Brian Weber will break down all things NFL.
I'm not doing truth. I'm telling you what the outcome is going to be.
That's the problem I'm having with you right
truth
now.
Truth is the name of your
because
book.
Because you know sell what's that book wrong, again. And you know what's right, you would prefer to go with what's wrong because the pundits are the ones that determine what happened.
I'm telling you what's going to happen.
No, I'm asking you.
The name of the show is not Shoulda, Woulda, Coulda.
Let's try this one.
That's our podcast.
Let me rephrase this one more time.
We're going to do that on
Sunday. Listen live Monday through Friday from 1 to 4 p.m. Eastern or catch all the replays and interviews on demand on the NFL on TuneIn.
It's like us being on our app and being able to come into your cell phones, and it's different now.
This is MLB on TuneIn, the podcast, presented by eSurance, official sponsor of Major League Baseball. Now, here are your hosts, Holden Kushner and Ned Coletti.
To close the podcast today, Ned and I are going to circle back to Gift Ngope, first ever player from Africa who debuted for the Pirates, as we discuss what his debut means for Major League Baseball. Gift Ngope is the first player from the continent of Africa, born in the continent of Africa. He's born in South Africa, to play in the majors, second baseman here. And I think this is fascinating. He's a 27-year-old, born in South Africa, and he attended high school out in Johannesburg. And then in 2008, he signed with the Pirates, and he's down at AAA, and he just got promoted. So I think this is just fascinating when you look at it, at the way that the major leagues is growing here, right? Yesterday, the Pirates had the first Lithuania-born and raised player in the majors, and today they got the first African player in the majors. Fascinating how the Pirates, you know, at a little disadvantage payroll-wise, they're literally going to the ends of the earth to find these guys.
Well, you talk about international scouting. That is really international scouting. It's great for the game of baseball. It's great for these athletes. It's great to grow the game. It's also great to give opportunity. And you're right. Not only is it a small market team, but let's face it, 30 years ago, more people were playing baseball in this country than play it today. And I think that the game needs to continue to expand, its borders as far as where you find players, where the game is played. I think it's a great story. And you think about some of the other sports that are prominent in this country. They've been international to a larger degree for a lot longer than baseball has. But it's great for the game, and I think it's going to be interesting to watch how these players develop and how many kids in the cities and in the countries that these guys are from, both yesterday and today, start to pick the game up because they see a game and they see somebody they can relate to playing it at the highest level.
Yeah, just think about that. I mean, not only Africa, but Lithuania. And you basically have to commit so many resources, don't you, to get out to so many different places in the world. I would think that would, in its own right, would cost a lot of money.
Oh, yeah. But again, if you sign players on projection, which is really what a lot of international scouting comes down to, there's not leagues in the Dominican Republic there's a different dynamic that you end up signing your players from. And if you're Pittsburgh, you're going to take a chance. You're going to take a chance on the athleticism, on the arm action, perhaps on the speed. Maybe you see power in a swing. You see a sense of understanding how the game is played. You're going to take a shot. It's not the end of the world if it doesn't work out. But you got to give the opportunity there because that's how you grow the game.
Yeah, and they also signed his little brother too. They ended up signing the Pirates signed Gift in Gopay's younger brother. We got out there for his major league debut in the field. He comes in as a defensive replacement at second base. He comes up and leads off the inning here in the bottom of the fourth, and he singles as the first major league player born in Africa. He was born in South Africa. And I was doing a bunch of reading up on this kid because yesterday, by the way, the first Lithuanian-born player in the history of baseball debuted for the Pirates yesterday. So they're going literally all over the world right now. But here's a kid that was in the 2009 World Baseball Classic with South Africa. Back-to-back triples off of Elmer Descens of Mexico, if you remember that. And
yep.
South Africa got the boot there pretty early in 2009. But his mom was actually working as a caretaker with the Rundberg Mets. It was their fields in the clubhouse, and they play a bunch of cricket over there. Not a lot of baseball, but it was cricket and rugby, a little bit of baseball, and he picked it up there. Later worked with Barry Larkin. And here we go, all these years later, right now, boom, Major League Baseball history, we just witnessed it.
What a great day. Best day ever. We're a little bit early on the best day ever. Tough to have a better day than he's having right now. Phenomenal. Just phenomenal.
A lot of fun when you're looking at what's going on here with the Pittsburgh Pirates. So let's get into this a little bit more. Ned, you have, as a general manager, I'm sure, sent scouts out to far and away places that you didn't think you'd find anybody. But have you ever thought about going to Africa and Lithuania? Because that's what the Pirates are doing. Are they a disadvantage with payroll? I suppose, yeah, you could say that. But the fact of the matter is, they dug these two guys up. They found them, and they both made it to the bigs.
Yes, absolutely. You know, a few years ago, Dusty Baker led a group of managers and players and executives to Africa to try and build the game. So it is starting to get its reach beyond the Dominican Republic and Latin America and Asia. A little bit of Europe from time to time. You'll have players signed. A player from Italy signed a big contract a few years ago, 18-year-old young man, infielder, I think, maybe third baseman or shortstop. But it's growing. And you know what? I love what Pittsburgh's doing because they are trying to continue to be creative, and if you have to be able to think out of the box and do different things, and that's what Neil Huntington has done. They've had some success over there, but they got to continue to fortify that, and they're looking where other people aren't necessarily looking, and they made a couple of finds here that got to the big leagues.
Absolutely fascinating to see what happened tonight with Gift and Gopay getting in second base, then coming up with his first major league base hit. That was pretty cool. That's it for MLB on TuneIn, the podcast presented by Esurance. Make sure to join us on MLB on TuneIn Live at 7 Eastern each weeknight. During the 5-hour show, you not only hear all of what you heard in the podcast, but you'll also have a chance to listen live to the games as they happen. Get the action all night long. For Abe and Dustin in the LA studio and Ned Coletti alongside me, I'm Holden Kushner, and we'll catch you mañana.
Thank you for listening to MLB on TuneIn, the podcast presented by Esurance, official sponsor of Major League Baseball. Esurance, insurance for the modern world. Catch us every weeknight on TuneIn, where we take you around Major League Baseball with live listenings, analysis, player interviews, and much more. Plus, be sure to check out our other great content on TuneIn, featuring the very best in sports, music, news, and talk. On TuneIn, get caught up in the moment with more than 100,000 music stations and 5 million podcasts from around the world. Exclusive sports content, including live MLB, NFL, NBA, and NHL games, and 24/7 news coverage from CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News Radio. TuneIn, your everything audio app.